Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread, and the only thing you'll think is delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises, just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at hero.co with code IHEART. That's hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
By law, 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne. My name's Taylor Payne, and one quick notice before we start. We have another Pod on the Tyne live date at Gosforth Civic Theatre. We'll be returning to our spiritual home on October the 9th. Tickets are on sale with an exclusive window for support and cast subscribers before general sale begins on Friday the 14th of August. We'll speak a little bit more about that later on, chaps, I'm sure. But until then, hello, George Culkin, and hello, Christopher Woff. How are we doing, George? Are we all right?
I'm all right. As you can see, I've changed my background slightly for our visual audience. Having had my my backdrop described as a child's bedroom in our first episode, I've taken plans. And I just thought you'd like to see what it is I'm working on at the minute. For those of you who are listening, I do have a big tactics board behind me, and you know, this is always, and I can't even really describe it as a passion of mine. It's just an obsession, tactical formation, and very much thinking of branching out, on the pod this year to do sort of tactical masterclasses with George Culkin. But this is very much how I mean to continue. How are you doing, Taylor?
I'm okay. I'm just taking in the tableau of unfortunate misery in front of me. It's really something, yeah. George.
Thank you.
I like how there's two of you going down the left wing on that particular tactic. It's great. And of course, a WAF double pivot in the middle.
The WAF double pivot in the middle, yeah. Taylor, yeah, seeing you on the wing there, firing in the bullets. I appear to be going in the wrong direction, but yeah. I'm sure not at all like Newcastle United at the moment. So, yeah, but we'll get there, you know.
The only thing that surprised me is that it's 4-2-3-1 and not 4-4-fucking-2, which is your usual stamp, isn't it?
It is, yeah, but, you know, we've got to move with the times and, you know, in my I'm very much fluid on the old tactics front.
And speaking of moving with the times, let's introduce a very thoroughly modern man, Mr. Chris Woff. How are you?
Yes, I'm all right, thank you. A little bit sleep deprived after going up to Edinburgh for the game, but I am back and, enthused for back-to-back friendlies this weekend, given what I've just witnessed. Yeah, definitely looking forward to that, yeah. Could not be more pumped.
Oh, lovely. Excellent stuff. Right, then let's get through some headlines before we do anything else. Here we go. George, yours first. Shaky hands, man. Yeisler meets the press. But is he a stand-up guy?
There's something to unpick there, isn't there? Yeah, Matthias Yeisler was introduced for the second time as Newcastle United's head coach, having done a brief media appearance out in Spain. He did the same thing at St. James's Park, and he began that by shaking hands with absolutely everybody in the room, which nice little touch. Took quite a long time. And then spoke. And I think if we are to be learning anything from this, it's that we should not be expecting verbal pyrotechnics from the new head coach, but very composed, very confident.
I saw a lovely little clip of that on the BBC Sport Instagram page, and the first two people that I saw when the video loaded was the back of your head, George, and then the side of Chris's face, and I thought, there they are.
Yeah,
and the Waldorf and Statler of the press room.
Just to interject on that, I know we are doing the headlines, and it's a very formal part of the show, but if I'm spotted at Dr. Sink's surgery in Turkey anytime soon, I mean, that will be a coincidence. Film, as we now know to our own cost, is a fairly unforgiving medium. You can get away with a lot just recording audio. So yeah, you may notice some changes.
Lovely stuff. Right then, a 2-0 eclipse, Everton overshadow Newcastle in Edinburgh. Chris,
yes, the rather curious friendly between Newcastle and Everton in Edinburgh at Murray Field, a rugby stadium. Not entirely sure why it was there. I've tried to find out, still can't really get an adequate answer. And Newcastle were humbled, started all right, but then lost 3-1 in the end. And yeah, it was 20 different outfield players played, and Newcastle did not look ready for the dawn of the new season.
Up for the Carabao Cup, Newcastle bag West Brom at home. George.
Yes, so Newcastle enter the competition in the second round this season, obviously not playing in Europe. They are at home to West Bromwich Albion of the Championship. You know, think back to last year, they didn't get many sort of comfortable, easy draws. Not saying this is easy, but they are at home to a Championship team. Yeah, 24th of August, that starts. We're expecting it to take place on the Wednesday.
And Yeisler needs full back, and more transfers are expected as that Liverpool game draws closer, Chris.
Yes, Yeisler has made no secret of the fact that he believes Newcastle need to make additions. He said that you are smart when journalists tried to push him on the fact that he required fullbacks and midfielders without actually saying
that. That's the first error of the new regime, isn't it?
Quite. After the Everton game, but Newcastle are trying to bring in players, Dedic, a fullback, and also they've looked at Højbjerg and other midfielders. They haven't actually struck a deal yet, but they are pushing, and clearly Newcastle need to bring in at least two or three experienced players.
They certainly do. Right then, let's move into the show, chaps. Yeisler arrives in Newcastle. New Newcastle manager Matthias Yeisler met the press for the first time. There wasn't exactly any tub thumb in Chris, was there?
No, that's not really how he operates. He's very measured. He's very in control. And what we will see a lot of, and people have already probably picked up on it already, is that if somebody has asked a question that he thinks he's already answered, he will repeat the fact that he's already answered it back in response. George had this when he asked a question. Although, to be fair on George, and you know I'm not usually very fair on George, I don't think the question he'd asked had actually been asked in that specific press conference. It might have been asked the week before, but he doesn't like... Whereas Howe was different in that... obviously, he never usually liked my line of questioning, but if someone went back and asked specific, almost a push for a deeper answer on something, he would usually engage with that, and usually, even if he said the same thing again or sort of just said it in a slightly different way, he would come back on that. Whereas Yeisler so far seems to be set on the fact that I've already answered that. I mean, he was asked, there was a one-word answer in his unveiling press conference when he was asked about if he decided on the captaincy yet, and he just said no. And just end of answer. So he's not someone who's going to overshare, I think, put it that way. But he spoke about the moment that he found out that Newcastle were interested in him and how a massive smile came onto his face, and he spoke very passionately about the job itself and the opportunity here, while at the same time, almost plead would be a strong word, but certainly urging patience and the understanding that Newcastle have a young side. This is very much transition is the word that he used in La Manga. It's also a word that he's used a lot this week, that he doesn't feel it would be fair to be judged too soon. And I think I think we all have to get on board with that, really, that he has inherited a very difficult situation. He's having to work on fast forward, really. And clearly, as we've already said, there are big gaps within the squad.
Yeah, I was kind of accused a little bit of not paying attention to what he was saying, but actually I have heard and had heard him talking about the style of play, which is kind of interesting, but I was trying to ask a wider question in that press conference. By the way, we only got one question each, so it's very difficult to kind of build a rapport or to develop themes. It was a very short, even for a kind of bigger press conference, it still only lasted 20 minutes. I wanted to know what his version of Newcastle United will look like, feel like, what they'll represent, if he'd sort of thought about that in any way, shape or form, as well as what they would play like. And he just kind of picked up on the play like thing. As I said right at the start, you know, there was not a lot in the way of kind of colour or in the way of sort of dramatic statements, big words. You know, one of his associates said, you know, with Matthias, you will not be getting big headlines. You won't be getting big words. And you sort of got to the end of it and thought, like, okay, what am I going to write about that? It's like, you know, you want a theme, you want sort of big ideas. And there was... And there was none of that. But he was very friendly in the way that he answered, very straightforward. I mean, whether he can keep that up, we'll wait and see.
He seems to believe that his football and ideology, Chris, is in keeping with the history of the club as well.
Yes, and certainly the recent history, but I think generally over the last 30, 40 years, maybe Keegan onwards, the idea that Newcastle are going to be front foot, that there's an aggression to everything they do in attack, continuing and perhaps building upon what Howe introduced in the sort of high press, high intensity way of playing. And he does believe that, and I think that Newcastle fans will respond to that. What is also clear from what he wants and will look to do, he talked about verticality is the big word that he speaks about, but largely he's going to be very direct in attack. If two or three passes will suffice, he's not going to ask his team to play tiki-taka football in the middle of the pitch. He wants to release pace in behind the opposition defence. He wants players running forward. He wants balls in behind. And so I think Newcastle fans will really get on board with that if there is success that comes with it. I mean, in the short to medium term, there will be patience, that he will get a honeymoon period, but it's all about eventually that turn into winning football. George and I had a conversation the other day. We were sort of talking about there are certain managers who the style doesn't really fit, and you'd say Sam Allardyce at Newcastle, stylistically, when that happened, it always felt misplaced to a certain degree. And obviously then there wasn't winning. If he'd won a lot of matches early on, maybe that would have changed. But when you don't immediately hit the ground running and you don't have that to fall back on, the sort of style of football that maybe most fans would like to see, Yeisler definitely has that. And I think that will hopefully serve him well.
I mean, if you need me to do a kind of deep dive into what verticality actually means, I do now have my tactics board. I'm really happy to do that. I mean, as far as I can tell, what that means is just kicking it straight up into the air, doesn't it? Isn't that what vertical football is? Is that lumping it up to the big man? I mean, it probably is, isn't it?
Knockdowns, mixer, get the lads in there.
Yeah.
Allardyce, all the rest of it. There is a quote here from him. This is what he said. Intense, aggressive, and of course, also successful. He said, that's why I'm sitting here. That is Newcastle's identity, which makes this a perfect fit in my eyes. It's going to be exciting. It's certainly going to be interesting. It's certainly not going to be boring, is it, George?
Well, it might be. But I mean, I think the thing is, we don't know, do we? I mean, that's the kind of excitement. It's that, is it? Are we excited? Are we terrified? Is it a bit of that? I mean, it is going
certainly
to be new.
Both, to be honest, yeah.
It's going to be new. You know, it's very difficult to sort of make judgments at the moment because the squad, the team, does feel so unfinished. And but yeah, I mean, and I like those words, and you know, that is kind of what I was getting at when I asked him those questions. He did talk about the DNA and how it sort of reflected his feelings about the way that the kind of the game should be played, and that, you know, what he's done previously within the kind of Red Bull organization, that's the kind of football that they play. So it does feel like that kind of fit, but you know, you also need the players to be able to do it.
Chris, you mentioned patience before, and I think this is going to be massively important because it's going to take time for this to gel and for everything to come together. And we're only a few weeks away from the start of the season. He doesn't have the squad that he wants. if he loses a few games at the start of the season, things could turn ugly, or things could turn slightly sort of, you know, antagonistic. It could be difficult for him in them first few weeks, and we are going to have patience.
Yes, because it's also not only a young and inexperienced manager in Premier League terms, but also generally. I mean, he's only 6-7 years into his senior coaching career. You also have a lot of young players who, until experience arrives, if Newcastle start the season badly or in difficult circumstances, confidence could take a hit. That might have a detrimental effect on them. And so patience will be required. And I think everyone understands that. I think bringing in a couple of calm heads, a couple of lieutenants who he could play on the field would be very important for him. A, if they've worked under him to get the message across as to what he expects and how he wants to play. But B, that leadership and carrying him through those difficult moments and helping bring these players on, but also to help bring Eisler on. I mean, he's not someone who's being drawn on exact targets for the season or moving forward. Even when he was asked about what the vision that was sold to him by the club was in terms of long-term and medium-term ambitions, he just talked about them being ambitious. He didn't say that they were going to get to a certain point by 2030 or they were going to win titles by a certain period. He just talked about he just focuses on the here and now. Even at one stage, and speaking to people around him, they talk about Yeisler as a player and how his career was cut short. He was seen as potentially being a future Germany at national and having this big career, and then he gets an injury and it's cut short. And so he knows that you can't plan necessarily too long term in football because things can change, circumstances change. And so he talked about, I can't tell you necessarily where we'll be in half a year, never mind a year's time, so I'm not going to make grand statements for further down the line. And he's just talking about it almost in cliches or slightly different, slightly varied versions of cliches by talking about it just being in little chunks and him focusing, and he uses the cliche that I can control the controllables. That's what I look to do. And that's how he's approached these, well, it'll be 3 weeks up until the Liverpool game that he's been in. And he's been, as I said earlier, he's been working on fast forward, but he's been trying to implement what he can and try not to worry too much about what he doesn't have, even if clearly he would like greater depth and greater experience within the squad.
There's another little quote here from him. It says, "We are ambitious. That's the most important thing, and also why I decided to come here. But this will not happen overnight, especially when you have such a big transition phase. We need time now." That squad is going to need built, George, isn't it? It's going to take time. But at the minute, he doesn't seem to want to discuss individual transfer targets as well.
No, not in the slightest. He hasn't bitten on anything like that, and which is totally fair enough. He was asked again. He was asked again after the Everton match, and he kind of repeated himself there. We'll come on to that. On that idea of ambition, but also patience and time, it's very interesting. He is totally right, of course. Like, we can just see how much of a new era this is. But there is a big caveat to that. Newcastle budgeted for seventh last season. They budgeted to finish seventh. They finished 12th. They went from Champions League finances, wage bill, to having no Europe whatsoever. That has forced them into selling Anthony Gordon, a transfer that didn't touch the sides in terms of bringing in money to reinvest. That's cleared their deficit with UEFA, made them compliant with UEFA. They need to get back into Europe. You know, they will be budgeting for seventh or thereabouts again this season. So, you know, if Newcastle are to be consistently, credibly competing, as, you know, to use David Hopkinson's phrase, by 2030, they need to be in Europe. They need to be in Europe now. They need to be in Europe as soon as possible. This isn't me attempting to put pressure on, but it is a real, you know, serious thing for them. They have to get back there as soon as possible. So patience is important and time is important, and the crowd buying into what is a new era and will be a young team is really, really important. But Newcastle need to be and want to be and think they should be operating at the top of the league. And so that has to, you know, that is the pressure and ambition that kind of comes with this as well.
He was asked specifically about Nick Voldemort, though, Chris, wasn't he? What was his response to that?
He was. Well, he'd been asked after Valencia about, because he played him as a number 10 in that match, and whether he saw that as his position. And he said that it's one of the positions. And then subsequently at Everton, when Voldemort came on at half time, he actually played as the striker in the system rather than as the number 10. But he talked about having spoken with Nick Voldemorta and discussed that he was aware from a distance that maybe it hadn't gone quite according to plan at Newcastle, and that he was aware of maybe needing to lift him. And he also spoke about his relationship with Sebastian Hoeneß, who is the Stuttgart manager, obviously worked with Voldemorta when Voldemorta had his real breakthrough season there. And he's someone who Yeisler worked under in Red Bull Salzburg in the youth system. So he knows him well. And that basically he was talking about tapping into the knowledge of those coaches and managers who've worked with his current players. And he widened it out from just Voldemorta. But it's quite clear that that is one of the things he has to work on. Newcastle, that you speak to people at the top of Newcastle and they talk about Voldemorta. Basically, they need to find a way of this work, and they spent £64 million, rising to £69 million on him last year. He's the club record signing in a PSR world. They can't just write that off. They need to extract far more from him. And he still looks, I mean, only on the evidence of 1.5 matches, so you can't read too much into too soon. He'd already just returned last week from his holidays because he'd been with Germany at the World Cup. But clearly, Voldemort remains a question mark as to where he fits in this side. Does he stylistically fit? But if there is a stylistic fit for him, also, how can he become more involved in the matches, and how can Newcastle extract far more from a clear talent, but someone who so far has failed to really fulfil that on a consistent basis?
It's clear that Yeisler is going to be a bit of a spiky customer on the touchline, as well, as we heard from Seb Staffer-Bleuler on our Extra Time show last week. The man himself said, "I will not change my style because that's my personality. On the touchline, I'm emotional, but I need to respect the box at the technical area, that is, a bit more. I'm a bit scared. I hope in the beginning the referees can close their eyes maybe here and there a little. I need to learn." It sounds like he's going to struggle to stay inside that box, George.
Yeah, I mean, we saw against Valencia that he was running up and down the line like a referee's assistant, really, following the ball. He can't do that over here. So, you know, that will be interesting. I would have liked to have asked him a bit more about that at that press conference, about that, where that side of his personality comes from, because he is so composed and confident. You know, it's not arrogance, but it's just that sort of measured sort of feeling about him when he speaks. But he's not like that on the side of the pitch. So, yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing that in anger for the first time. You know, you can fast forward to Liverpool a little bit, and, you know, it's going to be a great occasion. It's going to be a very emotional occasion too, because of Kevin Keegan. But, you know, when it's really important and the kind of business starts, what he'll be like. And that was the kind of closest, really, that he kind of came to emotion and colour. He was smiling about that. He was talking about the goosebumps he felt looking at the stadium for the first time with his coaching staff. And we will see a different side to his personality then, that's for sure.
Just on that point as well, I know that he sort of asked people in Newcastle when he first came in, what are the sort of exact Premier League regulations and rules on bookings and how often you may be able to get them. And so I think he's conscious of the fact that obviously he doesn't want to, I think it's if you get 3 yellow cards and you get a touchline ban, which obviously he does not want to accrue. So he is conscious of it, even if he knows that really that's part of him and it's not going to change fully.
I did enjoy the videos of him coming into St James's Park and seeing the pitch and the stadium for the first time. I always like to see that with new recruits for the club. It's kind of, I try to watch it through the eyes of a fan thing, and let's just see how you react to this. Do you know what I mean? But he gave a bit of a wow and he had a good look around. But obviously he's on duty, isn't he? He's got to take photos and stuff like that, so I'm sure he didn't get the chance to take it in too much. We got a fresh pitch for the new season, Chris, and a slight reduction in the hill as well. Is that right?
Yes, the slope has reduced in size because Newcastle, from the way it was described to me, it was that Newcastle previously had one of the worst drainage systems or oldest drainage systems in the Premier League, and they've introduced a brand new one so that really, if there's a downpour, that the water can be removed very, very quickly, and that's part of the reason why the pitch was entirely dug up and relayed this summer, and now it's one of the best in the Premier League. But in order to install that, they've reduced, I can't remember the exact figures, but I think from it's taken maybe a third of the slope away, so a third of the percentage of the slope away from, obviously, slopes from the south stand down towards the Gallagher end. So the slope still exists, but has reduced slightly. There is also the new screens within St. James's Park. There are going to be four different screens, that, so that rather than people just trying to see the one screen which was attached to the glass perspex, there's a curved one in Strawberry Corner. There's another three for people to actually see in VAR incidents, or at least be told that there is something happening with VAR and potentially see replays and obviously team news and the like. There was the unveiling the other day. I did think that maybe the size of the pitch had actually narrowed. And I've done some, but I think I've done some digging on this. Nick Hassler adamant that it hasn't changed in terms of the pitch dimensions. What has actually seems to have happened
is that dimensions,
depends which one you prefer. It seems that on the dugout side of the pitch, that they've extended the size of, they've reduced some of the cinder track around it and extended how much, I don't know, if it's 4G or AstroTurf, whatever the exact texture makeup of it is. And so I think it's a bit of a, it does look like the pitch is moved inwards, but I think that's just because there's more green there before you actually get to the touchline. So Newcastle are adamant that dimensions don't change. The Premier League would have had to have been informed if that was the case. The Premier League say they haven't been informed, so I think that's just a trick of the eye. But yeah, it is going to look different generally inside St. James's Park this season.
If Newcastle are playing vertical football, does the height of the pitch have to change at all?
We shall find out, I suppose.
Oh, dear. Let's hope nobody hits a spider cam. We've had enough of that in the summer, haven't we? We don't want to see that again.
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural, because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So if Matthijs Jäisler is uncomfortable with the repetitive nature of press conferences, you can probably expect plenty of practice of that in the coming days and weeks. A 3-1 defeat against Everton at Edinburgh's Murrayfield Stadium only served to re-emphasise some of the squad's vulnerabilities. And with just 9 days to go before the Premier League season gets underway, there is a bit of anxiety about Chris, isn't there? The transfer needs are glaring, I think it's fair to say. And Jäisler's tone said it all afterwards.
Yeah, just before coming to that, I really like the way you say Everton. What's that get you? There's a sort of the way that you where the emphasis is on it.
Everton.
Can you say it again?
Everton.
Everton. Yeah.
Everton. Everton.
Yeah.
You don't Everton. Like to say. You don't like to do consonants, Chris. Everton. So that's. I think that appeals to your Everton. I'm trying to think what else you do that is like that. You like it when a man doesn't pronounce consonants in a name.
Yeah. It just has. It just sounds better. In my view. Anyway,
if I say Everton again, it's just going to become a sound and it's going to lose all of its meaning completely. Everton. Everton. Everton.
So
I like a consonant. I like
a strange name
consonant.
For a football club.
Everton.
Everton.
You should pronounce the T. Everton.
Come on, we're wasting time here.
There was a lot of, there was some headlines or coverage from it which suggested, you know, that almost implying that Jäisler was ramping it up on the transfer front, or sort of putting it on to the executives above him what he needed. And I don't think that's necessarily entirely fair. Yes, he did say that the needs are obvious, and he did sort of say that that's not in my hands really. But that he's being asked these questions, and if he's not going to give specifics of it, he's at least trying to answer the question to a certain degree. And as I said earlier on the show, as a trail, he was asked specifically, do you want a fullback and a midfielder? And he sort of paused, smirked, and said, you are smart. You see the needs. We know the needs. You see the needs. And so without actually saying those words, he was confirming that that's exactly what Newcastle are looking for in the market right now. And there was a bit of a pause when he first, well, obviously when Howe was leaving and when he was first coming in, and then he had a bit of time to assess the squad. And I think any further changes will be from the assessment that he's made. But Newcastle already needed a fullback. They needed a fullback last season. They've then lost three, if you include Matt Targa. They've lost Kieran Trippier and Emile Kraft as well. They literally only have two senior fullbacks. Yeah. Midfield-wise, they've lost the experience and creativity of Bruno Guimaraes. They've lost what Sandro Tonali brings. And theoretically, they have six players in midfield at the moment. But one of them is Joe Willock, who will leave, I think, almost certainly, if and when another player arrives. There is interest in Willock, and Newcastle expect him to go. He's in the final 12 months of his deal. And then you've got sort of almost square pegs and round holes. You've got the likes of Joel Linton, who's not, in my view, really an out-and-out number six in a double pivot role in this sort of squad right now. If you're going to play a 4-2-3-1, I don't think he's disciplined enough or good enough on the ball. Maybe you can create a blend of relationship, but where does he actually fit into that? So yes, there are glaring needs, and he wasn't even trying to hide away from that.
An experienced midfielder, as you said, would probably be quite handy right now. Pierre-Emile Højbjerg has been mentioned, João Pelinha among the options as well. Even Carlos Baliba has been mentioned at times, Chris.
Yes, the Carlos Baliba one came out of after the game. I mean, I don't know how accurate that is in terms of Newcastle trying for it. He is a player that they like and know of, but you wouldn't sort out the experience or lack of experience that Newcastle have within the squad. So I'd be surprised on that one in the very short term. What he really wants, Jaisler, is a general, or for want of a less cliched term, in the midfield, who can be his leader on the pitch. There may or may not be captain, but someone who brings that experience, know-how, who the younger players can look towards, who can control a match. That's what Bruno did for Newcastle. He controls games, maybe in a slightly chaotic way for him, and maybe all action. They probably want someone who's a bit calmer in the style of players to what he brings, maybe not as effective in attack and building Newcastle up. But that's very difficult to achieve in the current market at this stage of the window with the budget Newcastle are likely looking towards, and it's probably going to end up being a short to medium term option. Maybe it's 2 years, 3 years someone comes in for. So Pierre-Emile Højbjerg at Marseille, they is someone they'd identified, someone Ross Wilson has worked with before at Southampton. Talks have stalled on that front. I don't think it's completely dead in the water yet, but for now, that isn't necessarily happening when Newcastle maybe thought it was. João Pelinha at Bayern Munich, looks like Aston Villa are favourites there. Newcastle accept they're not front of the queue, but he's someone else who they're looking at. There's about half a dozen names they're considering, some they're more serious about than others. And yeah, I think Baliba in some ways would be exciting, but I don't think it would solve the issue as to what Newcastle need, which is that Premier League or at least top-level know-how and that leadership that they can bring.
And Ahmad Dedic as well is another name that's been mentioned recently. He's a fullback that Jaisler knows all too well.
Yes, and he really does fit the bill. He is someone Newcastle are actively considering and having talks at the moment with Benfica. He can play on both sides. He is predominantly a right back, but can play on both sides, which is something which appeals to Newcastle because of their lack of options. Ideally, they're bringing two, but even if they're bringing one who can play on both sides, and they probably would start, he probably would start that opening game against Liverpool because it doesn't look like Tino Livramento is going to be fully fit for them. So if he was to come in the next week, he's probably going to be parachuted straight into the side. Jaisler worked with them at Red Bull Salzburg. He's attacking. I think there's a lot of excitement around him, but he hasn't played in one of Europe's big leagues yet. No Premier League experience there as well. So again, a slight concern there. And he's only had a season in Portugal. And observers may not remember this, but he did play at St. James's Park last year, and Anthony Gordon gave him a bit of a torrid time. So that's not necessarily the best encouragement.
I've got nothing to add on transfers. I would like to point out Chris has now relayed the anecdote of him being described as smart and clever by Matthias Jaisler three times in this podcast now, and it is the first time anybody has said that to him since his GCSE woodwork teacher. So he's right to revel in this.
Disappointingly, it was not in response to my answer. So
I also like the fact you mentioned that he smirked as well, and I thought it was a non-smirking press conference.
I've given up smirking. The other thing, this is now a callback to about 5 minutes ago, which is almost beyond the limits of my memory. Chris likes to say Tottenham. There's no second T in the way Chris pronounced Tottenham. Correct?
Dear me.
Tottenham.
In the cup final. Yeah. Tottingham.
Thank you.
All right. So, George, first hour was pretty good. First half hour, sorry, was pretty good last night, but the result wasn't. We're only a week or so away from the season. Is there reason to be alarmed here?
Well, I mean, it's Newcastle United. You know, we go from extremes, one extreme to the other. I don't suppose people were too alarmed after the Valencia match. You know, we're going to see them again this weekend. We'll see what's what. It felt to me like Everton just looked more set, more ready, fitter, more in control of what they wanted to do. And I suppose that's a bit alarming for me that, you know, that they seemed to know what they were about far more than Newcastle did. But is that a massive surprise? Well, no. I think when you've had a new coach in the door for about a week and he's only had, you know, a few training sessions with the full squad. So alarmed. I mean, that's part of how I'm feeling at the moment. Yeah, definitely a bit of alarm, a bit of excitement, some nervousness. Yeah. It's also just that not knowing. I mean, so I think we've talked about this in the past. It's like, oh, well, you know, if you've got Bruno in the team, if you've got Gordon in the team, if you've got players, Tonali in the team, you know, let's forget about form a little bit. We sort of know what we expect from those players. We're looking at a lot of new players at the minute, not knowing what to expect from them. We're not knowing how it's all going to gel together. We don't know very much about the new man and how it's all going to work. And it's just all of those sort of certainties that we've had for 3, 4, even 5 years have now sort of gone, or a lot of them have gone. So that is the feel, you know, a result of performance like that against a team that we do sort of recognise, against Everton, you know what you're going to get against a David Moyes Everton team, just weren't there. So it sort of reiterated to me, as Chris has spoken very eloquently about what they still need to do, but it also speaks to the situation that we have around the club at the minute. We just don't know what to expect, do we?
Johan Wissa was brightish again. Chris, he was dropping deep into that number 10 position and linking up play. He could have had a penalty as well, but is he a bit of a fish out of water playing that deep? There's not a great deal of attacking options, really, is there? Do we think Newcastle might be likely to bring one in?
I think Newcastle have a lot of attacking options. I just don't think any of them are necessarily the ones that the people think are. You know, they've got three centre forwards theoretically, but does anyone have full confidence in any of them? I think there's question marks over all of them. Willasula ended last season really well. Still not convinced that he's going to be absolutely prolific yet. He's still learning. Wissa, as you said, played as the number 10. He's played there for the DR Congo, did well in that role, but I don't think, and he looks good moving with the ball. He looks far sharper in terms of carrying up the pitch and being involved, but technically I don't know if he's really the player to be in that position, to be laying people on. Valdemara played as a 10, then as a striker. Is he in either of those roles? I actually think as the number 10 moving forward of the current players they have, as long as they can get a couple of deep line midfielders fit, if they're going to play this system, Jacob Ramsey might actually be the player for there. I think that he has the technical quality to potentially be able to play that role.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It's with attacking options that what alarms me about this side is that it's just the lack of goals.
Yeah.
I mean, they lacked goals last season, even with Anthony Gordon. He's left their top scorer. They have Barnes who scored. He's got 16 goals, but as we're going to talk about later on, some people may argue, and I may even be among them, that Basmona Touré should be in the side. So then where does Harvey Barnes fit in? Does he play on the right? Does he start or not? They don't necessarily have a natural finisher. I still don't think they've got enough goals from midfield in general. And so that's where my concern is. I get why people are pushing, should Newcastle be bringing in attacking reinforcements? But at least the very live focus of right now, it's fullback in midfield. Whether that changes later in the window, whether someone like Jacob Murphy leaves and then they maybe look for another attacking player, that things could still happen in the last couple of weeks of the window. But for right now, it looks like Yeisler is going to have to try and find a way to extract more from the attacking players he has in his disposal. Because the frustration with the last couple of games is that Touré has looked so direct, getting down the wing, putting crosses in the box, and there's nobody there to get on the end of them. They don't have a natural finisher. And it's like, it's all well and good having a throwback winger who wants to get the ball in the box, but to what effect right now if you haven't got someone to put the ball in the back of the net?
We're still sort of awaiting that eureka moment, aren't we? Whether it's, you know, with Waltimada or whoever else. I mean, he is the big one. It's like, are we expecting, you know, something just to click and it suddenly works? Is that the player that, you know, is there a player in there somewhere? And it's like working out his position and his... And really, I think it all points back to last summer and the work that Newcastle did, the desperation that they had at the very end of the window. It wasn't a strategy. It was just doing what they could at the time that they could do it in. And, you know, we know about the mitigation for that, the context for that, but it just does not feel like a jigsaw that fits. Again, like, okay, a new manager, new head coach, German. Can he get something out of Walter Mader, his compatriot, that sort of Eddie Howe couldn't? But again, you're watching him. He's not impacting proceedings. He's not getting involved. Is there any way at all that, you know, that they can make this work? I totally agree with Chris. I'm sort of looking at this team and squad at the moment and wondering where the goals come from, because it's not obvious to me. And yeah, I mean, I would love Newcastle to bring in a forward, a really good, experienced, or quality centre forward. But we know how much money they cost and how difficult they are to sign. And yeah, so that would be one kind of area where alarm bells are ringing a little bit to me.
Everton's opening goal was a direct counter-attack mistake by Sven Botman. His shakiness compounding concerns about a lack of depth in defence. It is a bit of a worry back there, Chris.
Yes, I think that what Yeisler has identified as how new as well is that there's a lack of pace at centre-back, and that can be covered for when you've got full-backs to a certain degree who have that pace, but Newcastle have got no depth at fullback and are playing youngsters there at the moment as well. But for Botman, he has looked shaky throughout pre-season. I didn't see the Bristol City game. I was away, but from what I'm told, he really struggled there, as the entire Newcastle side did. But I think he's had another couple of fitness issues in pre-season, just minor ones, and he looks short of confidence at the moment. Chow, I think Chow's been all right. But that partnership is not quite maybe what we necessarily hoped or expected it may be going into the start of this season, and there are concerns there. And when they have the lack of depth at fullback as well, it feels like for a team which conceded, I think, the most goals beyond the bottom three and Spurs and then one other side last season, to have those concerns and that lack of depth going into the season, yeah, it does just feel like they still are a bit of a soft touch in defence, and Botman's form is definitely a bit of a concern.
Yeah, we know what a quality defender he is, what a quality centre half he is when fit, when on form.
Yeah,
that would be another concern for me at the minute. He just does not look like that player. Certainly, as things stand, I would be expecting him to come out of the team and Dan Byrne to go into the team for the Liverpool match. I mean, I might revise that opinion after this weekend. First choice defence. Theoretically, isn't too bad at all. You've got Livramento, you'd have Chow, you'd have Byrne or Botman. You've got Lewis Hall, you've got Cher in reserve. I mean, that there's quality there, but there is just zero depth, and not enough options. And of course, it's about partnerships and gelling, and it's very difficult to do that when half, if not more, of those players are missing for whatever reason or another. So, yeah, I tried to be a little bit more positive. As I'm talking, I'm sinking into a great deal of sadness.
The return on Lewis Hall made a bit of a recovery challenge in the build-up to that goal as well, but Everton regathered the ball and Tierno Barry scored. First sight of Lewis Hall for a little while, Chris. Those Man United rumours have quietened down slightly.
Well, they're quieting to a certain degree, but those at Manchester on the Manchester patches are still saying that there is interest there, and ideally he's the left back that Man United want, but they know it's a difficult deal, and Newcastle are adamant he isn't going anywhere. Now people will throw back that they said the same about Bruno and last summer about Isak. I think it is slightly different, and it would take a big, big offer for Newcastle to consider letting Hall go. I mean, as I say, they need fullbacks; they can't be letting any go. Yeah, I mean, he looked a bit short of football, which is understandable as well. He'd come home early from La Manga because he'd had a slight knock, but then he's back involved and it'll be important for him to get game time this weekend as well.
Dan Byrne should be involved as well, George, as we mentioned before. This weekend he's returned to Tyneside. Yeisler described him as really important and a leader. That sort of leadership is what Newcastle are going to need.
Rocking a snazzy new haircut.
It was very 1940s fighter pilot kind of do. I enjoyed it.
Well, that's the kind of leader Newcastle need right now. I was about to start quoting Shakespeare there, which would have had nothing to do with 1940s fighter pilots, wouldn't it? Nothing Smoke me a kipper, I'll be back for breakfast. That's what I should have said.
Captain Flashheart.
Good to have him. Good to have him back. And yeah, there's a dearth of leadership. That was something that that Yeisler talked about in that press conference last week. He talked about a vacuum. You know, that was one area that did feel a bit sort of newsy when he talked about that. And he's right. It was something that Newcastle, as we've said previously, were very conscious of. Anyway, leading into this season, with Trippier going, with other experienced players going, and of course, since then, Bruno, the captain, the man who leads by example, who was the engine of the team, has gone as well. And it's, you know, I think we can see early signs of someone like Sean Sturt playing in midfield. He's doing, you know, he's doing little bits of what Elliot Anderson now does for Nottingham, for Manchester City now, excuse me. And, oh God, that doesn't feel good to say, does it? And also England, he's pointing people around the pitch. Now, Sturr does that. He does those little things, but he's a kid, right? He's a kid. And it doesn't mean that others within the team can't now step forward. And obviously that's the hope. We've seen Chow get the armband, you know, in Spain against Valencia. So, you know, can other players, can Lewis Hall, can others step forward and replace those who've gone? There'll have to be some of that, but they are missing out on experience. They need some of that in the team.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with, thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Joe Linton took the armband last night, and then he concedes the penalty on 35 minutes, which was never a penalty, let's be honest. Scored by Ndiaye. Is he a realistic candidate for that role, Chris? You were saying before you don't even know where he fits into the team at the moment or into that system. So could Joe Linton be a realistic candidate for captain?
I mean, I get that he charges around the field and that he sort of brings that energy. To me, he just doesn't smack of an actual captain. Now, I say this with the caveat that I would have probably said the same if I'm going to bring cricket into this, but in a cricket perspective, before Ben Stokes was England captain, I wouldn't have necessarily said to you that I thought that he was a natural leader, and clearly he actually did have some credentials to take on that role and adapt it his way. I'm not convinced on Joe Linton, though, for a start. I don't think, ideally, if Newcastle bring in good quality midfielders over the course of the next couple of weeks, does Joe Linton even get into the starting 11? What is it that exactly he would bring if that system's going to be there? And I just don't... I just if you're going to have someone speaking to the referee and trying to be a calm head... Again, Bruno was slightly different way as well. I thought maybe he was a bit overly emotional. It took him a bit of time to grow into it. But Joe Linton just, for me, is not... It doesn't strike me as a natural skipper. But I don't see what he does on the training pitch. I don't see what he does behind the scenes.
Yeah,
so Yeisler's given him that role. But it was interesting, the fact that Chow had started the game, but clearly... And I mean, I asked Yeisler after the game about whether he had actually decided on his captain, and he basically, again, he smirked again and said, not publicly, I'm not going to say it, but he also implied that he is still deciding upon it, and I think it may depend upon who comes in. And also, he hasn't seen Dan Byrne in action yet, and it probably depends upon whether he sees Byrne being in the 11. Is there also going to be a club captain and a captain on the day, as Newcastle have had previously? That's something we're not sure about, because he is going to bring in a leadership group beyond that. So Jacob Murphy's had the armband given to him in both games too. I'd be surprised if Joe Linton be given the permanent captain.
You mentioned Stokes. I mean, that's interesting. Obviously, the captaincy role in cricket is very, very different to the one in football. It's far more important in cricket. You're involved in absolutely everything, not just what's going on the pitch, but involved in selections and sort of everything else. It doesn't sort of matter necessarily that much. And I think, you know, you also mentioned Bruno, Chris. I was kind of baffled by that decision. That felt at the time like that was a sop to him, hadn't got to move away. You know, there was that clause in his contract. Nobody had come in to meet it that summer. And it was felt like this was part of an attempt to sort of get him back in board, get him back on board and make him feel, you know, important. And in the end, he was a magnificent captain for Newcastle. It wasn't about shouting. It wasn't about, pointing people. It was, you know, pointing at people and doing that sort of stuff. It was about leading by example. He was also, until last season, available all the time. And yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, at the moment, I don't think Newcastle have that player. I mean, apart from Chow, perhaps, who, you know, who obviously played every week just about last season. Does it sort of matter hugely? I'm not sure if it sort of really does. But again, you know, Dan Byrne for me would be a kind of great club captain at the minute. At the point he is in his career, he's 34, he is a leader, he knows the club, he knows everything about it, and could be that sort of senior figure in the dressing room. Is he going to play every week? We don't know. But yeah, it just doesn't sort of look like a natural choice at the minute to me.
The entire outfield swapped at halftime last night, Chris. Lots of youth filling spots, especially in defence. That back four was all academy players in the second half, wasn't it?
Yeah, none of the back four have made a first-team appearance for Newcastle. I think only Majdrag Pivas has made a first-team appearance in general for anyone, and that's when he's been out on loan. So it was Dylan Charlton, Majdrag Pivas, Henry Johnson, who probably wasn't even going to be in the squad for Valencia unless Isaac Mourana got injured, and then he came on at Valencia as well and then so played. And then at right back was Mason Miley. And I think Mason Miley's probably the closest to potentially being involved, 17-year-old younger brother of Lewis. I think Eddie Howe had taken a shine to him before he left, possibly maybe even thought he was pushing Leo Shahar for in the pecking order to be involved in that role. He can play in midfield as well, but has played at right back. But Yeisler talked afterwards about being great that you can give the opportunity to play academy players, and I get that, and I do think it's a positive, but at the same time, realistically, are any of those four going to be involved come the start of the season? You'd hope, in all likelihood, probably not, unless Mason Miley can push on. And I also think you flip it a little bit, and so another member of the media made a remark, and I found it interesting that if Eddie Howe had been in charge, would he, even in a pre-season friendly against Premier League opposition, have played a back four like that during the second half? And I think that it's unlikely that he would have played all four of them in that situation. And they did all right, actually, given the context of the match. They didn't get bullied necessarily, but you can see they're a little way away. But it just highlights how short Newcastle are right now, given the injuries and given the lack of full-back cover they have.
It's great for them to get experience, isn't it? But really what you want to be doing is getting minutes into the legs of the players who are going to be playing in the team week in, week out, you know? But we just don't have those players at the minute. What's the latest on Lewis Miley, Chris? Fabian Scher, Tino Livramento, they're all really big misses at the moment, aren't they?
So Yeisler was asked about them after the game, and he suggested that Scher has the chance of maybe possibly being involved this weekend. Lewis Miley as well. Tino Livramento, I think, is a little way behind the hope, and all three of them are going to be involved in full training over the next week or so. Livramento is unlikely to be fully fit for that first game, maybe looking at the second weekend or third weekend of the season. So possibility that Miley and Scher will be back for the Liverpool games. But again, how much fit they will actually be is another matter.
Those new signings, though, Chris, they are causes for optimism for you, aren't they?
Yeah, and what Newcastle have tried to do is, as we've said repeatedly, is sign potential, sign players who they think can go on to be the next Anthony Gordon, the next Sandro Tonali, not necessarily exact profile-wise, and not meaning to put too much pressure on them, but the players who have that high ceiling is the other thing we keep hearing all of this summer. And Sean Stewart, in particular, every time I've seen him play so far, that want to get on the ball, that plays beyond his years. The cliche I'm going to grasp at there is that he doesn't look like an 18-year-old playing midfielder. He always is demanding the ball. He's always looking to play it forward and usually accurately breaks the lines. That's going to be exactly what Yeisler wants. So there's positive from him. Hornacek, the goalkeeper, I think has been mixed so far. Could he have done better for Everton's first goal? Possibly, but I think he made a couple of good saves. You can see that he offers that extra player. He's not, I wouldn't say he's the best I've ever seen with it with his feet, but he's decent, and that offers a fresh dimension to the Newcastle side. And so I think that hopefully have signed a positive change at goalkeeper there. Nick Pope wasn't in the squad again, and it looks like he will leave. And then I mentioned him earlier, Touré. I just think that he's so direct. He's so quick. Patterson, the Everton fullback, had a nightmare against him. Really didn't like playing against him. And he wants to get the ball in early. He doesn't hesitate before whipping in. And usually it's a pretty good cross as well, albeit Newcastle haven't got anyone on the end of it. So you can see what Newcastle have got there and in those three players. And are they ready to display all of their talents even in the next 6 months? Possibly not. But I also think that there are real causes for optimism from each of those three in particular already.
I think we have to ask the big question, though, George, don't we? And that is, will Matthijs Yeisler get the patience that he has asked for?
Well, ask me after Liverpool have beaten Newcastle 5-0 on the opening day of the season. Or alternatively, ask me Newcastle have beaten. I mean, we just don't know, do we? I mean, I think there is, from what I've felt and seen from talking to, you know, Newcastle fans of my acquaintance and family and things like that, there is genuine excitement about something new. And I think people have taken to him. I think people like the way he's conducting himself. And there needs to be patience to a certain degree. And then he needs to be given time, you know, in the same way that Eddie Howe would have needed those things as well in the same circumstances. I think it would have been more difficult for him to get it because everything would have been referred back to what he'd already achieved. You know, this is the guy that brought us a title. We're struggling now to win games with kids. Like, and it would have reflected on what he'd done. I think the fact that it's a clean slate, it's a new start.
It took Eddie Howe a while to get going as well when he first came in.
It certainly did,
didn't it?
Yeah. And there was massive, you know, there was massive understanding at that. He wasn't getting booed. He wasn't getting called out. There was an incredible atmosphere at games at the time because people were so delighted. There was a new ownership, but people were asking the question, you know, until that second win of the season came at Leeds in the January, you know, people, you know, it's like, is this working? There were whispers of that around the training ground as well. You've got to win, you know, so everybody needs to kind of get buy-in. So the best thing that could happen for Yeisler is that even if they don't win every single match at the start of the season, that we can see the start of something, we can see identity, we can see that aggression, we can see, you know, that Newcastle United DNA. David Hopkinson talked about that same thing, us against the world. It's that sort of mentality. Like, if you want a team that is fighting for everything, we're, you know, that's Newcastle United 2.0. It's that sort of attitude. People will buy into that. But as I say, we've taken out a lot of certainties around the team and around the club too. So it is just that feeling of not knowing. But yeah, there has to be signs of ambition and progress. There have to be signs of, you know, something to buy into. But he deserves time. He deserves a fair crack of the whip. I know Newcastle will be absolutely electric against Liverpool, and it's about everybody getting behind it. You know, Newcastle United, all of those cliches, and then there's a chance. But if we're having doubts before a ball is kicked, then we're screwed.
Podonthetine.supportandcast.fm is where you can pick up a subscription if you want to listen ad-free or get additional content via our Extra Time service. We're working on a Q&A, with a Transfer Industry Insider as well, and you can send us questions for him. But of course, you'll need that Extra Time subscription if you want to hear that interview.
Just on that, by Transfer Industry Insider, don't expect this to be X is going to move to Y. What was specifically this will be about is actually the minutiae of how transfers work and the dealings of it between clubs, how a transfer comes about, what actually happens within it. And also, we've had a lot of questions already up until this point about the likes of why is a situation with Sandro Tonali not the same as Ashley Cole and quote-unquote tapping up years ago, and how has the transfer industry moved on. So it's more about that, the mechanics of it, rather than it's not about some transfer expert who's coming on going to tell you everyone who's moving X, Y, and Z. But that's, so that's what we're looking questions for specifically on that front.
Yeah, and if you've got any questions for the other, you know, extra time offering that we'll be giving out shortly, Culkin's Talking Tactics. I've got my board. Anything you want to know about vertical football, or anything else like that, I'll. What?
Chris, can you wait until he's out of the house and then go around and just take that board and just put it in a skip somewhere, please?
I do need sign off from my Pod on the Tyne colleagues for that, but I just think that's a formality at this stage. I mean, everyone's really excited about that. So, yeah, send me in your questions.
Looking forward to that. Please get in touch. podonthetyne@gmail.com is the email if you want to give us a message. Don't forget as well about our live show, October the 9th at Gosforth Civic Theatre. Tickets on general sale on Friday the 14th of August at 10 a.m. Already available to subscribers if you're tuning in before that. Right then, chaps, that's it. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you, Chris Woff.
You're very welcome. Hopefully after the back-to-back friendlies this weekend, including on my birthday, it'll be a far brighter look and preview to the new season, which is obviously just the weekend afterwards when it begins.
Yes. George, thank you very much for your time as well.
You're very welcome. I'm going to be going to the Lasses match on Sunday as well, and look forward to bringing you some reaction to that and talking in the future about what's been another whirlwind summer for the women's team as well.
Whirlwind.
I did say whirlwind, yeah. Yeah, whirlwind. I mean, admittedly, I'm taking my pronunciation of consonants too far by inserting them in words where they don't exist.
Oh, whirlwind. I think we should leave it there. Thank you very much for everybody for listening. This has been Pod on the Tyne. Take care. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you soon.
Hey, let's talk about something a lot of us deal with, thinning hair or hair loss. If that sounds familiar, CAPS has solutions. Their hair restoration treatments are personalized, designed to strengthen your existing hair, encourage regrowth, and improve scalp health. The providers at CAPS guide you every step of the way with advanced treatments for noticeable, long-lasting results. And when you book your first hair restoration appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.